Sean Brock is the Charleston chef who's made news as a one-man revival movement and as a James Beard nominee for Outstanding Chef in the United States. His cause is bringing back the forgotten foods of the South, and he understands that the past feeds the present. And to know the past, you run into that word origin, where foods began. And that's when the fun really starts. Well, Sean took a trip recently. He's back, and he joins us from Charleston. Sean, it's good to have you back with us.
Oh, it's great to be here.
I hear you're back from a trip to West Africa. Why West Africa?
Well, the cuisine that I study, we call the Low Country cuisine, and it's the cuisine of Charleston and Savannah and this whole region here. Uh-huh. And in my opinion, a lot of the dishes are influenced by West Africa because of the Atlantic slave trade and the rice plantations, the indigo and the cotton, which were the three major crops here in Charleston. So basically, if you try and understand how a cuisine works, you have to understand the importance of the cultural influences. And the major cultural influence is West Africa. So I went there to do a little bit of research with some plants, some specific peas and rice and things. But I really wanted to see the original, truest, and most honest form of all these classic dishes that we call Southern dishes and that we consider Southern food. Things like gumbo and jambalaya and black-eyed pea fritters and Hoppin' John. And I really wanted to see where they came from and see them in their most original form and then kind of take a look at where they are today.
Uh-huh.
And you know, try and explain that because it's amazing how a dish can change when it moves to a new place, and
there are
different cultural influences. So I was there cooking with people who have the same interests. One day, in fact, I cooked with four generations. It was unbelievable.
What was the dish that you were making with the four generations?
It's our version of gumbo. And what was incredible was it looked exactly like our gumbo.
Ah.
Looked exactly like it, but it was completely different. It didn't have tomato. It didn't have a roux. But the colors were the same. The texture was the same. The flavor was the same.
Did it have the filet, the dried sassafras leaves for thickening?
They have a different thickener, but it's almost the same thing.
Uh-huh.
It's nebedai, and it's very, very similar. It's like a bush, small tree, and the leaves are used in lots and lots of dishes there. And I may or may not have brought some back in my luggage, if you ever want to try it.
We don't have to go there. You know, I know one of the things that if I were to ever get to West Africa, anywhere in Africa, I just imagine that the peas and the beans would have to be fascinating.
Well, see, that's one of my passions, is collecting beans and peas. And when I went to that market where they have just bags and bags and bags of these things, people were actually like laughing at me because I was like buying so much of them, and the vendors were like, "What is wrong with this guy? Like, why is he so excited about this? Because it's so common to them."
But they're
not
going to see it elsewhere, you know.
Oh, you wait till you see these things. They're just beautiful, speckled black and gray peas, and some that are all white, and these beautiful red ones. And you know, I may have or may not have brought some back in my luggage.
but the flavors are all different, I gather.
Completely different, you know, different levels of earthiness, different levels of sweetness, different starch levels, and they're all used for different applications. There was this dish that I'm actually making today at the restaurant that I learned there. It's called akara, and it's like street food. It's a black-eyed pea fritter. And what they do is they take black-eyed peas, or, well, not what we know of black-eyed peas. They're a little lighter in color. They're a little creamier colored.
Uh-huh.
And they take those and they soak them for a couple days and allow them to ferment. And then you rinse them a couple times, and you have to sit there with your hands rubbing these peas together to remove the outer hull.
That's like one and, by one, right?
I mean, yeah. It took 3 hours.
Whoa.
It took probably 3 hours to get all the hulls off these peas, all by hand, no machines. Then you have to wash away all the hulls and rinse and rinse and rinse. But, that, you know, that's the hard part. Then what blew my mind was they took the peas and smash them in a mortar and pestle with some water, and then dropped them in some hot peanut oil, and they puffed up like a beignet. And I was asking, there's no baking powder in there, you know? And they're like, no, it's just two ingredients, water and peas. And I started thinking, it's the fermentation. It's the gas that's produced during the fermentation process that acted in the same way that baking powder acted. And these things were as light as a beignet. I mean, and the flavor of that lightly fermented cowpea was just amazing. And still one of those things that just haunts you. You know, it's like you have to have it again.
Right.
Because the pea was raw. Essentially, a pea was raw. So it wasn't this braised pea flavor. It was that raw pea flavor with that fermentation. And it was slightly sweet, but it had that sourness. There was so much complexity in a dish that was water and peas.
Huh. Wow. And you're making it today.
I can't wait.
I wish I were there. Sean, thank you. Really intriguing.
Oh, thank you so much.
I could try this with almost any bean, probably.
Yes.
And get something that I've never tasted before.
Send me a picture of it.
You got it. Talk to you soon.
Thanks. Take care.
Sean Brock is chef and partner at Husk and McCready's, both in Charleston.